Okay, my name is Shai Corman. I'm a podcaster, a lifetime music fan, or at least music fan for most of my life. And I'm here at South by Southwest as a Wonder House to have an amazing time. I'm excited to be here.
It's pretty wacky what they've done to this place, yeah. So our project is about people's musical memories. What we find is that just about everybody in life has some occasion or period of time or something in that has happened that has shown them how music is important to them. Do you have such a story to share with us?
Oh, I have a few formative musical moments. And I'm going to go back to, and I don't know how many people bring up Weird Al Yankovic as their formative musical moment.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, I was 10 years old. I lived in Montreal. That's where I grew up, in Montreal. And it was the Just for Laughs Festival, which is this very famous Canadian music comedy festival. And when you grow up in Canada, you're not really expecting every artist to come through on a regular basis. It seems much more like a big deal, you know, because it's still got to cross the border. And my parents came and showed me in the newspaper that Weird Al Yankovic was going to be hosting a comedy showcase at the last festival. And my mother got us tickets to see it. And she took me and my friend Noah. And it was at the Théâtre Saint-Denis, which is a great theater in downtown Montreal. And Weird Al, the way it worked is because he was hosting, Weird Al gave you two songs in between each act. So there would be a comedian, Tommy Davidson was one of the comedians, he's pretty famous, and then Weird Al would come out and do a couple of songs. And again, I couldn't fathom the idea that I was going to get to see one of my musical heroes at 10 years old in concert. But he did. He played, if I remember correctly, some of the big ones he played were Addicted to Spuds, which is all about his love of potatoes. They also played, You're Good Enough for Now. Anyways, he played a bunch of really great Weird Al songs. And when the show ended, my mother, who is an incredible force of nature, said, "We've got to go meet him." And so we go to the backstage door, and I am a rule follower. I saw the rope, and I said, "Nope, I'm not going anywhere." My mother, without even batting an eye, just walks right through. And she walks all the way to the wherever he was, and I'm just waiting there terrified. And eventually, she reappears and waves me and says, "You gotta come, you gotta come. Weird Al is waiting for you." And so here my mother pulls me backstage where there is no, where I have no credentials or anything, walks me around to his tour bus, and Weird Al is standing there waiting to meet me. And he shook my hand, and I told him, I don't remember what I said to him, but he told me, shook my hand, and he said, "Keep in touch." And so I wrote him a letter, and I got an autographed picture back. And then about 30 years later, I met him again in person, and I reminded him that he said to keep in touch, and I was back. And to me, it's a musical memory because he's a musician, but it's also a moment where I got to interact with somebody I admired so much and who made so much music that made me happy. And then as a person, in person, they were the same way that I would have always expected. And you don't always get that chance, especially with a rock star. And he's a guy who is a musical genius. He can play every single style, every single note of every other performer. Brilliant at comedy. And he's also sustained this incredible career, long overdue for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So for me, that is a formative musical memory. And to this day, even though I listen to all sorts of serious, esoteric, complicated music, Weird Al is a touchstone for me.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 10 years old.
10. And when did this happen? I'm trying to remember how long Weird Al has been around.
Weird Al's been around since about 1980. Early 80s is when he starts appearing in the Dr. Demento show.
Michael Jackson stuff he was doing.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So that's his big moment with Eat It.
That's right.
And this was around 1990, 91 or so that I met him. So...
So talk a little bit about, you know, I think of him as a comedic musician. You just spoke of him in very glowing terms about his musical capabilities. Talk about Weird Al's musical whatever.
Absolutely. So, in fact, and I think more and more as you're seeing the generations of musicians that and comedians who grew up listening to Weird Al as a part of a fabric of their life as opposed to people who are already famous, you're seeing more and more of this recognition. But one of the things that he does so incredibly well is when he writes a parody, he is dead set on recreating the music as it was played with his band. Now, some people might find that easy, but when you have a band that is playing the Red Hot Chili Peppers to perfection, playing the Beach Boys to perfection, and then if you go to a deep cut track, Genius in France, on the Poodle Hut album, playing a 11-minute complex Frank Zappa tribute song, okay, you're looking at a band that can pretty much do anything and has to do anything because of the standard that he sets. Then if you look at the musical, or I would say the lyrical side, which I think is a huge part of music. You can't take music, you can't take lyrics out of music writing. He is scientific in the way he writes his parody lyrics so that the rhymes and the timing are mimicking the original. So if you look at his song Word Crimes, which is a parody of Blurred Lines, it's from his last album, which is, by the way, amazing, right? 30 years into his career, he's putting out amazing stuff. And there is a line in the original song where it says, I don't remember the exact line, it's, you're the hottest B-word in this place, right? So Al, the song's all about grammar, he's doing a verse about it's with an apostrophe, it's without an apostrophe, and he replaces, you're the hottest B in this place with, you would not put it's in this place. No one else can land that over and over and over again with that perfection, the way Weird Al does it.
I've never met anybody who appreciates Weird Al Yankovic to the extent that you do.
Oh, well, I will say there, you know, I recently watched a discussion about him. During the pandemic, you had so many interesting Zoom and live things pop up. The band Portugal the Man, who are a pretty hip, cool, alternative pop band, along with Mike Mills from REM, one of my musical, I have REM stories if you want, musical formative stories. You know, oh, you want to hear some REM stories? Got some REM stories.
So REM is very close to my heart. So is Weird Al. And I want to ask you about Weird Al's appearance on Punch Up the Jam separately if you don't know that podcast. But, yeah.
Okay.
I'd love
but,
to hear your REM
So
stories.
I'm going to segue. I'm going to do a musical segue from Weird Al into REM here.
Because I'm a lifelong REM fan. I grew up,
it's
my favorite band.
Me too. REM is my favorite band too. So, Mike Mills from REM, who Weird Al has parodied them a couple of times, including Spam, which is a deep cut parody of Stand, which is hilarious. Mike Mills, not only is he, when he's talking about Weird Al, he's talking about Weird Al's musical genius, he also starts saying, you know, and I also follow the solo work of the guitarist, Jim Kimo West, who's this incredible slack guitarist who then went on, I think, went to win a Grammy. So musicians are not just following Al, but they're following that group. That band has actually been the same band for 30 years. No, so should we want to talk about REM at all?
Yeah, if you're through with Al. Yeah.
I mean, I'm never through with Al, but I'll talk about REM.
Okay.
I'm sorry that
you've really, I've got to start listening more. I know half a dozen Weird Al Yankovic, just the big ones that I've seen.
Oh, you got to go to the deep cuts.
Yeah, that's what
he's doing a tour, the second time he's doing this tour, it's called the Vanity Tour. But he dispenses with the theatrics and the costumes and the screens, and it's just him and the band, and they focus almost entirely on the original comedy songs that he's written. There's a few classic parodies, but it's all deep cuts. And then he does the last tour, he did a different cover every night. So the night we saw him, he did Refugee by Tom Petty. Other folks got to hear Radio Radio by Elvis Costello. He got to play every one of his musical influences. So REM. So REM, as like a teenager coming of age, my bar mitzvah gift certificates, I got a bunch of CDs and one of them was Automatic for the People. And that's mind expanding. That changes your life. A kid loves Weird Al, and I still love him to this day, but when you hear Automatic for the People for the first time, now you're suddenly talking about those depth of emotional lyrics and sounds and production that fill up your heart and take you in different moments. I still remember poring over every sound and word in Night Swimming and Find the River, which is, by the way, the best 1-2 finish of any album in music history. And same thing, they eventually came to Montreal, and my friends and I had an exam the next day. We studied all night. We went to see them. And again, it was this idea that you're listening to R.E.M. for years as a kid. Am I ever going to see them? And then we got to see them at the Forum on the Monster Tour, which was the last tour with the full original band. And that was the definition of rock star for me. The way Michael Stipe, the way he marches across the stage and motions to the audience in different places, and the way Pete Buck does a jump in the splits, and Mike Mills is his like rotating or very animated guitar playing during Let Me In, which is a song they wrote for Kurt Cobain, who had just passed away. And then Bill Berry, one of my original drum heroes. I'll never forget when they called out his name. He did this thing where he kind of just rotated his sticks in the air and kind of cheered at the audience. And I thought it was so cool, and it just filled up my heart, yeah.
What's impressing me about hearing you talk about music, Shai, in particular, is that you are so deeply not into just the music and the lyrics, but performance.
Yes, absolutely.
You seem a fan, an analytic fan of performance. How do these guys do what they do? What makes them distinctive? What leaves an impression on somebody like you 20, 30 years later?
Absolutely.
After seeing them, yeah.
Yeah, the live experience to me has always been the difference maker for any band. I love songs and I love listening to albums, but I'll listen to a grainy soundboard bootleg where the levels are all wrong of R.E.M. in 1982 a lot of the time before I'll pop in a studio album, because I love that raw energy, I love the imperfection, and I love the notion of an artist giving themselves over to the crowd. That true selfless, I am here for you, even though I create this thing for me.
That's the sensation I had when I saw Harry Chapin.
Oh, wow. Oh, remember, wow.
You know Harry Chapin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He had a connection with the audience. And then Brian wasn't there, but last week we interviewed John Batiste.
John Batiste from Colbert?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's a guy. Again, that guy just, his spirit is as much as he is a musical genius.
Yeah. And that's the sort of experience that was, that he comes on stage, and it was a solo. We thought it was going to be, we had both thought he was going to be with a band of some
right.
sort. It's just him and a piano and his melodica as well. And what he does in an hour and a half with an audience is amazing. There is something special about performers, and sounds like Weird Al is of the sort, who connect in this special way.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. I love that. I love that feeling. That and I don't know, you know, there still are those performers, but especially I always worry that it's going away, or maybe it's new for every generation, but have you seen The Stones?
I have not.
Okay.
So the first
time I saw The Stones, I was 19 in London, back of Wembley Stadium, and it felt like Mick Jagger was standing right in front of me, right? It didn't matter where he was. He's there, right? Incredible. And Michael Stipe, Bono, right? These rock stars that traipse the stage and you feel them in the audience, and they're really playing. It's not a backing track, right? I have nothing against the backing track shows. Those are amazing performances. But, you know, I wonder, are we going to have acts like that in 20 years? So I make my kids go to see as much of the stuff as I can.
Okay. This is wonderful. I'm so glad I bumped into you guys. And that. So now you've gotten acquainted with the studio. You've provided us with another interview for our Musical Memory podcast project.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're going to ask you to sign a release.
Yeah, sure.
That's okay.